really didn't go to school past eighth grade. And I decided I wanted to be extremely successful because I wanted to prove to the world and I wanted to prove to myself that I wasn't that person. And I did it.
Jennifer Marr, a soulful prosperity coach, spent 28 years as a top producer in real estate, earning nearly $500,000 a year. Her journey began on the streets, battling addiction and homelessness. Through soulful prosperity, Jennifer rebuilt her life, turning her struggles into a powerful story of resilience, transformation, and ultimate success.
When I was about 19, one of my cousins came to me and said, like, you're not going to college? Why are you drunk in the middle of the day? Like, it just was normal. Like, I can just walk in a store and walk out with a case of beer. I'm allowed to say shit here, right? Because I haven't told all this part. So now we're even. I had a boyfriend, turned me onto heroin. He lied and said it was cocaine, and I did a line. I was in love the first time I did it. The second night, his business partner plops down a bag of heroin and cocaine mixed. I thought I liked heroin. This was crazy.
Welcome to another episode of the Real Mentors Podcast, real standing for real examples altering lives. And today I have with me Jennifer Marr. Jennifer is not only a friend and colleague of mine, but she has an amazing story of redemption from addiction to life on the streets. Jen has also seen her business collapse. All of that I say to say that she's here today. She's rebuilt a life through soulful prosperity that she could have never have imagined in those dark times. And that's why I am honored and privileged to have you here today. Welcome to the show, Jen.
Thank you, Sean. Good to be back with you. I love our deep conversations. Always good.
There's just some people that you connect with, and I don't know what it is. It's the law of attraction, the universe, the struggle, the pain that we've both been through. And I was a guest on your podcast virtually, and I believe you were the first time I ever shared publicly in that setting that I was in prison.
Yeah.
And you got that out of me because you're such an open book. Yeah. You're such a great spirit, great heart. What is soulful prosperity? Explain to our audience what that means to you and how that's helped you reforge your life.
So after I got off the streets, I got pregnant with my daughter under the worst of circumstances, and it turned my life around. And I woke up one morning and said, I'm going to get my real estate license. And I operated what I now coin as my shadow why. And I decided I wanted to be extremely successful because I wanted to prove to the world and I wanted to prove to myself that I wasn't that person, that version of me that I was for those 8 years or so. And I did it. You know, I became an industry leader. I was in the real estate industry for 28 years, top producer, both in residential and commercial. Ran a partnership in a brokerage. I founded my county chamber of business council. First, it was the chamber of commerce. Also a community leader, dealt with a lot of the elected officials, you know, going to Albany and doing all these different things. But I still felt a void and I wasn't whole. I was hiding and I was operating, wanting this success, but I wasn't taking care of myself. You know, I didn't really know the answer to who I was and what my purpose was. And so I still felt that need to kind of like de-stress at the end of the day and drink probably too much alcohol and do all kinds of things that were not feeding my soul. And then I had my business completely blow up on me. But the 5 years prior to that happening, actually, my journey with my spiritual journey started like 21 years ago. I stumbled upon a Buddhist monastery, started meditating. I actually became an ordained Buddhist priest. But I had like two personalities almost. You know, I had this spiritual practice, deep spiritual practice that meant the world to me. But then on the business side, I was, you know, very rough around the edges, just no bullshit, hardcore, get it done. And like a boss bitch, you know?
Right.
But I didn't bring those worlds together. And then the pandemic happened. And real estate shut down. So I got to work. And I was the founding chairwoman of the Putnam County Business Council. And I still got all those emails, even though I wasn't the chairwoman anymore. All the emails still came through to me. And the businesses just started crying out. They were freaking out, so scared, so angry. you know, the political division started, the social eruptions were happening, and I have a half black daughter. It was a very, very intense time. And I just went to work. I started helping these businesses. And that's when I realized this is what lit me up. I never found anything that lit me up. And it was the coaching and the helping people overcome their fears and their anger and all those negative emotions that hold us back. And all of a sudden, I just knew who I was and why I was here and what purpose I served. But I still stayed in a business. You know, I had already knew that this business relationship was no longer serving me, but I stayed out of fear, out of scarcity, out of comfort.
Was the money good enough to stay too at the time?
Oh, the money was phenomenal.
Right.
You know, I was making just about $500,000 a year.
But in your gut, you knew.
Oh, I knew. I knew. And that's it. My business blow up was like one day I had it all, literally that afternoon at noon, it was all gone. All the money that I invested, I didn't take care of myself. I didn't have the right paperwork to protect my investment, the right paperwork to protect my partnership, because I was operating out of that like space of like a kind of pretending to be superwoman. Like if I could just do everything, he'll love me and never leave me. My business partner, right? No regrets, because I went into that relationship uneducated. I mean, I defaulted into real estate because I'm a high school dropout. I really didn't go to school past eighth grade.
Wow.
And so no regrets. I say it was a very expensive college degree because I invested over $500,000 into that company. Yeah. But I learned so much about myself. So thank God when the shit hit the fan, I'm allowed to say shit here, right?
You're allowed to say fuck too if you want.
Good. So when the shit had hit the fan, I had already been doing the work. So through the pandemic, I realized people needed me, not in the way that I thought. What they needed was the best version of me. And to be the best version of me, I had to put myself first. And I finally learned that and discovered that and started really taking good care of myself from the inside out, not about what people thought or you know, how I would look or, you know, any of that. I just let all that shit go. And so I pivoted on the dime. I started my coaching business. I didn't even have any capital.
It's like the decision, it happens like this. But the lead up to that decision was decades in the making. Because what I'm hearing, there's a lot to unpack there. But what I heard was the thing that you found your purpose, you knew who you were. All the things that led up to that were the elimination of the person you were not.
Yes.
And even though your gut knew it, your sensibility, the money's too good. I've already overcome all this shit, but I'm doing good. So let me just keep going. And now you're operating from the fear of loss. Yeah. But you still know in your gut. And, you know, I find that a lot of people, or at least if they're willing to admit it, they know that they're not in their purpose. They know that they're not doing anything that is lighting them up. They're just continuing to go down the road less traveled, or excuse me, the road easier traveled because it's familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go back to your struggles because that's what really endeared me to you, because I didn't really see that coming when we had that conversation. Tell us about your life of addiction, your life on the streets, because I think that there's one person out here that'll hear this and it'll resonate with them because they're going through some shit and they think there's not a way out or there's not a bright future. So paint that picture for us. What does your life look like, you know, however many years ago?
So it goes way back. And I, you know, my mom, her parents gave her up when she was 6 weeks old. They would spend some weekends with her. And she lived with her grandmother and her uncles. And all those relatives died by their 50s. She's literally, my mom's 77 now.
Wow.
She's lived longer than any of her relatives on both sides of her families. We come from a real long line of very dysfunctional Irish alcoholic, just a lot of mental health issues. So she married my dad because he had like six children in his family, but they got divorced when I was about 6 months old. And my mom did the best that she could. But really, I didn't have any parental supervision, or I didn't have any mentors or anybody in my life. Like, you know, you can be anything you want in the world. As a matter of fact, when I was about 19, one of my cousins finally came to me and said, "What are you doing? Like, you're not going to college?" And I'm like, "I can go to college?" I had no idea. Like I said, I didn't go to school past eighth grade. Nobody said, "You need to go to school. Why are you cutting out? Why are you doing this? Why are you drunk in the middle of the day?" Like, it just was normal. It was right. Just my mom had a series of men in and out of our lives. Some were abusive relationships. And but she did the best that she could right. with what she was given. And my father was just MIA. And so that was a very dysfunctional life. And I built up this persona of this like party girl. I was the wild one. I was extreme. I had zero fear. I was born with no fear. Like, I was the kid jumping off the cliffs. You know, my brother would be like crying and I'm like, "Yeah, you're a pussy." And I would go. Right? That was me from like, I guess that gave me the attention that I didn't get. I don't know.
Right.
Right.
And it's also your spirit.
Yeah.
That wild spirit.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I have no regrets over any of it, because listen, sometimes I got to call in that side of me, you know?
Absolutely.
There are times that street gen needs to come to the table.
You can't be a boss bitch without it.
No, you cannot. And sometimes that's what you need to be. So I would party, you know, through high school, whenever, you know, all my friends were like functional and I was the crazy one.
Where does it take a turn where it becomes unmanageable and dysfunctional beyond repair?
Well, I think it always was. But then I had a boyfriend who turned me onto heroin. He lied and said it was cocaine. And I did a line. I mean, I never shot heroin. I always snorted it. And I was in love the first time I did it. It like took me to a place. He had a lot of money. So we were very functional. And it got bad, and, you know, we broke up, we'd get back together, we'd break up, we'd get back together. And then I kept trying to get clean. And I actually had several stints. I went to California at one point to go to a rehab, and I was out there and I was doing really well. I was living in Newport Beach right on the bay with a bunch of girls. And he was in Florida and owned a restaurant. He's like, come on, let's get back together. Let's get back together. The second night I was there, his business partner plops down a bag of heroin and cocaine mixed. And I thought I liked heroin. This was crazy. And I did it. And so we had a ton of fun for like a year. We had the first restaurant, then the second restaurant. And even that first week, our friend came in from New York and he would use needles and he OD'd on that bag of stuff. And we still kept going. So then we finally had our own restaurant, and we then started this. We were in downtown West Palm Beach when it was the crack capital and the murder capital of the country. And we started smoking crack. And the next thing you know, we don't have a restaurant and we're on the streets. And he actually left me on the streets of West Palm Beach. And the irony of this is he died last year. He OD'd on a train going to Coney Island. He left me on the streets, went back home to his rich parents, and I stayed and I went as low as you can possibly go. So then finally I got arrested, and somehow my mom found out. She got me out of the Dade County Penitentiary and got me on a plane in
shackles.
Yeah. I was disgusting and dirty. And she put me in some rehab upstate, I don't know where it is, but it's like this crazy road over the Hudson. And I escaped two nights in and hitchhiked.
With the shackles, or did they take
No, they took them off once I got into the rehab.
You keep surprising me, so I wouldn't put anything past you at this point.
Nope. Escaped in the middle of the night, hitchhiked my way to Manhattan, and I was on the streets of Times Square for about a year.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I slept under the George Washington Bridge, and I had so much divine intervention. Like, I stayed safe. I mean, I had a lot of traumatic things happen to me. I've been kidnapped, all the things you can imagine. And then I ended up pregnant with my daughter, and that was it for me. I just, somehow that gave me what I needed. I had a purpose, because I really just didn't. And I also never felt connected to anybody, because I just didn't have, there wasn't any like real love or a mentorship or nurturing in my life. And I knew I didn't want that life. I knew there was something not right. So I guess I decided to go all the way down because I didn't see a way up. And then that was it. Got my real estate license and became Superwoman.
Well, there's got to be some time in between those two things, and we'll get to that.
There was. I was a very dysfunctional person for a long time. But
how does someone who reaches that level of depravity, that level of just not giving a fuck, just you've given up on yourself, you've given up on the idea of anything other than living in the exact moment to get high, you get pregnant. Was there always something in you that wanted more? Was there somebody along the way that sparked something? Because I cannot believe that, yes, there's divine intervention, but the Jen that's sitting here now had something in her that was telling her to keep going.
It's God. You know, I was always special. There was always something, a gift about me that I made people feel good. I mean, even on the streets, I helped so many people, and so many people helped me. I created, you know, loving relationships and kind relationships where we looked out for each other and we took care of each other. But there was also a freedom to it. You know, like my mom was miserable. Like she hated her job. She was always broke, always with some other man that just wasn't good. And I just didn't want that life. So I don't think necessarily that I gave up and didn't care, but that felt a hell of a lot better. Listen, I spent a lot of time in Washington Heights sitting on milk crates, playing dominoes, drinking Heineken and tomato juice. And that felt like freedom to me, you know, even though I didn't have a place to sleep and I didn't know where I was going to go home. And I ended up in some really, really bad, scary situations.
I'm sure a white girl out there.
Oh, I was crazy.
I can only imagine.
But people loved it. I had so many, you know, families take me in.
You've got to have, and if you know the street, because we know the street, you've got to have some kind of charm, charisma, some kind of way to navigate that. So your street smarts, they're off the chart.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for a white girl at the time, to be living in a life where there weren't too many white people.
And that made it more dangerous. The cops hated me because I was mostly with black people, and the cops hated it.
Yeah.
Hated it. I've never been like raped by a cop or anything like that, but I've been in that position where I'm in the back of the car, and if I didn't charm or talk my way out of it, you know, there was some real dangerous situations. Yeah.
There had to be some scary fucking times.
There was. And a lot of black women hated me because I'm with the black men, and a lot of like craziness, real crazy. And they're just like, what the hell are you doing here? You know,
I'm building the muscles to rebuild my life and start changing others. That's why. You just don't fucking see it yet. Give me some time.
Yeah. Something. I've never even told all of this part. So now we're even, because I haven't told all this part. Okay. Nope. Because nobody needs to know, you know, or they do, but it doesn't matter, because that's wasn't so much about who I was. It's about who I was becoming.
I thank you for your honesty and the fact that you own all that shit, because the truth is we're here to help.
Yeah.
We're here to help ourselves, because this is therapy and we've talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
This is therapy for me. This is therapy for you. And hopefully we're going to impact just one person that hears this and says, oh, okay, I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your redemption. You're pregnant. Your daughter's coming. What does that rehab process look like? How long does it take? And who's in your corner?
So my mom did really come to the rescue, you know, and so I moved in with her, got my real estate license, and just started really working hard. And that was probably it. You know, I didn't really have much else. I have a close relationship with my brother, but he lives in Colorado. I really kind of estranged my, like, outside. We have a very small family because all my mom's relatives are dead and I'm not close to my father. And I am pretty close with some of my father's siblings, but they all live far away. I did go to like 12 steps for a little bit, but it wasn't for me. And I chose the different path to recovery. I drank up until about 3 years ago.
Right.
And I think it was really when I stumbled into that monastery. So that was when my Olivia was probably about 12. And I was a hot mess. I wasn't the best mom. You know, I wasn't always present. I drank a lot and would work. And I just kept feeling like if I worked and just had success, that
It'll make up for all of it.
And I didn't do any of the inside work. And the reason why the 12 steps didn't work for me, quite frankly, I was now in suburbia and these women really didn't accept me. And the men just hit on me. That was my experience in the 12 step program. They were like vultures. And I was so vulnerable and so scared.
Right.
And didn't have any kind of confidence because the minute I thought somebody would know. And then I kind of like had to face that version of me. And I don't think I was ready to face all that I had been through. I wouldn't have been able to raise my daughter and do, at that point, I wasn't strong enough to face who I had become, what I had been through, what had happened to me. So maybe that was also one of the reasons why I didn't stay with the program.
How old is your daughter now?
She's 28.
So this is, you know, there's a big gap of time between then. You finally got sober 3 years ago. I know we shared that information. I'm sober 2.5, more or less, a little less than 2.5 years. So we got sober
around the same time.
And there's something to be said about the clarity.
Oh my God.
Because when we drink to the excess that we admitted to drinking, and like so many people do, you're basically putting a Band-Aid on something.
Yeah.
And, you know, give yourself grace and permission to be like, I don't know what the fuck it is. I don't know if it was this thing that happened to me, that thing, this disappointment, this resentment. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you know something's off. So you find sobriety. And just like me, we also talked about the 12-step program not working for me. I think it's an amazing program.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it has changed. And I fucking must have said this 28 times because I feel the need to say that Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, or any kind of program is amazing. I can only hope to impact a fraction of the lives that it will. But for individuals like yourself, who I like to coin as unicorns, because you are one-offs, you are Neo in the Matrix, you're an anomaly. The shit that you just told me, you should not be where you are. But here you are. Here we are. Thank God. What did work for you when you realized that that box, because I always say those programs are a box, and some people need the rules. They need boxes and they need to structure. There's a reason, you know, when I went to prison, I realized there are people who are career criminals, but petty criminals, but they're always in and out of jail because they cannot figure out a way to live in the street.
Right.
And jail offers them the discipline they cannot find on their own. It's sad.
And bologna sandwiches.
Oh, God. I used to give those away. People would take them. But I was going hungry that day on Rikers Island. Fuck that. I'll wait till the next meal. Oh, man. 55 buys commissary. Jesus Christ. Bring them back the memories. Anyway. Sorry, I got lost in thought. Where do you find what you didn't find in those rooms? You mentioned the Buddhist temple.
Yeah, for me, it was the meditation. It's going within, you know. And even when I quit drinking, I hadn't had like a alcohol-related issues in my life or alcohol problems. I was a social drinker at that point. And it really was the pandemic that helped me to see what other people saw in me. I was so busy thinking like, I got to do all this stuff so they don't see that. When they were seeing something that I didn't see, because everybody was coming to me. I mean, the elected officials, my county executive is coming to me and saying, how should we do this? How should we do that? What about this? I dropped out of school in eighth grade, but they saw this in me. And I'm like, why don't I see it in me? And then, so the more time I spent meditating and then expanded those practices of raising your consciousness and your awareness of what your actual thoughts were. And here's the kicker. This is what happened. So I had this great habit of journaling. And then sometime like in 2021, for some reason, I picked up my journals and read them. And it was like, I really wish I didn't drink. I wish I drank less. I wish this. And I'm like, what the fuck? Who's saying that shit? Because no, not who's saying that. I know that's me. Right. But who's the one going, oh, just have a glass of wine. It's not a big deal. Who's the one saying like, you know, oh, it's that voice. And it was the first time I realized that who I really was not Jen the party girl. It wasn't Jen the badass. It wasn't Jen the mom. It wasn't Jen the broker. It wasn't Jen the industry leader. There was something else deep inside. And other people saw it and I didn't.
It was incongruent. You were living one way, but your soul, pun intended, was intending for you to be a completely different person.
Yeah, Sean, I'm a nerd. Like, all I want to do is take courses, read books, and coach people. If I can just do that all day, every day, like, I am happy.
Let's run the streets, do dope, smoke crack, go to jail. Couldn't be further from the true you.
No, I remember, like, one memory, right? I'm in, like, ninth grade. And we go in to the store, steal a case of beer. Like, I can just walk in a store and walk out with a case of beer, okay? And just putting them and just downing them and, like, just doing crazy stuff. Like, I just had to make up these versions, these personas, because I just didn't know who I was.
Well, you've got a far better, juicier, more helpful story to tell now because of all that shit you've been through.
Makes me one hell of a coach, by the way.
You know, I try to encourage people who have yet to find their stride to just accept the fact that all the shit you've been through is a tool for you to offer others to deal with their own shit.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we don't see ourselves as those kinds of people. But, you know, people are our greatest resource. And we all have the ability to lift one another up based on experience.
And you know what's funny? I actually work better with high-performing people, people that have a high level of success and so on. But they're stuck and they're not happy and they don't feel free and they don't feel joy. And they're like, this woman has been through all of this and has struggled and then lost it all, built it back, and she's happy and free. And what the heck is going on here?
You offer an instant perspective as to what the fuck am I talking about?
How can I be complaining?
Yeah. And, you know, it's pretty cool to have that dynamic because I'm facing it myself. I'm faced with the same. You've seen, you know, since we met a couple years ago, how much difference in me there is. Yeah. And it was just, there's still a struggle. Just the other day, I broke down. It's like, this is fucking lonely. Like, because I'm stepping into a place that I have no idea what's going to happen. What's on the other side? I have no idea if I'm going to succeed. I'm going to fail. I'm going to look like a fool or make a fool of myself or say the wrong thing.
What you're talking about right now, the practice is getting comfortable with the unknown. Right. And actually knowing when you're in that space is when you're actually at home. And one of the practices I started a couple of years ago, I really changed a little bit of my meditation. And it is literally just sitting. And when the thoughts come in, you let them go. Thoughts come in, you let them go. Thoughts come in. And then you get to this place where it's just space and completely unknown. You don't even know how much time you're sitting there. You don't know what, like, you're just in space. And then that really helps with the type of thing that you're going through. So then when you're in this world or in this human experience that we have, that's what you're looking for. You want to be in the unknown. And when you start slipping into the comfortable and the, you know, the daily grind and the mundane, you know, no, this isn't where I'm supposed to be.
And I know it because I'm aware enough and I'm wise enough and I've spent enough time reading energy,
celebrate
money around
it.
The right people. So I know what's going on and I'll even self-sabotage prior to making any big moves. So something big's coming up. The old Sean's going to show up for a few weeks or a fucking month and just try to sabotage it. That's how strong the pull is. And a commitment I made to myself this year was to be more mindful.
Yeah.
Period. To strengthen my deep relationships with others, starting with myself.
Absolutely. It has to start with yourself.
And I think that I've been so inclined, and I was an only child for 13 years, and I just muscled my way through life. You muscled your way through life. And you find yourself alone, and that's okay. You're okay with being alone.
Yeah.
How does someone tap into that inner wealth, that inner voice? Because you mentioned something that I just got covered in goosebumps. You went back in 2021 and you started reading, I should quit drinking. When I got sober, I went back to my notes to fucking college.
Yeah.
To college. So we're talking 22 years prior. I found notes. What would your life look like if you stopped smoking weed and drinking? And I just was like, the voice has always been there.
The voice has always been there.
Everybody listening has that voice. How do they tap into the silence in order to find the real voice or the quiet, the negative voice and strengthen the positive one?
So there's a lot of tools. One of my favorite tools is fun, right? So you give these voices and these different, you know, like the anxiety, the fear, like the big one was laziness for me. Mm. I was so afraid. I associated that like life on the streets and the drug addiction and all this as being lazy, as if I didn't want to be like a successful, productive person. That's what it meant to me. I don't think that's what it meant. But lazy, I had a big aversion, and I would just judge my daughters, like, you know, like, what the freak? Like, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? And everybody around me, nobody could work me. I can outwork everybody. And then, so these different voices represent parts of ourselves that we are denying, right? They are shadow selves. They're the shadow parts of ourselves. And so you just give them a seat at the table, like, oh, hello, fear. I know you, right? Lazy. Now that I've accepted, so I had to do this practice through shadow work where like whatever you're being triggered by, which was laziness for me, I had to say over and over, I am lazy. If anybody would be like, is Jemar lazy? Or fear too was a big one. Is Jemar afraid? Is Jemar lazy? They'd be like, hell no. But I am. I love being lazy. Okay. And now that I accepted that and gave lazy a seat at the table, like, okay, laziness, what do you need? What's going on? How can I nurture you? How can I take care of you? My downtime used to be filled with like drinking a couple of bottles of wine, you know, some ice cream, some Chinese food, and just binge watching. Not that I'm not judging any of that. Okay. But now my downtime is like, what course am I taking? What documentary am I writing? What craft am I doing? Where am I going with my family? What adventures am I going to plan? And it's like, it's opened up. So to every emotion or every side of you that you are denying, when you deny the negative, you deny the potentiality. With every negative, there's a positive. So you have to love and nurture all the sides of you. I love Street Jen. I love everything about her, everything about her. And I never deny her anymore. She is allowed always a seat at the table, and all the things that I experienced and I went through, lying, stealing, cheating. And a matter of fact, and I don't know how much time, but I'll tell this quick.
Take as much time as you need.
The things that happened with my business partner, right? And my husband too. My marriage fell apart when the business fell apart. It was like, these patterns just were like, whoa. But I was living and hiding that shame and the guilt. I had so much shame and guilt. But really what I was doing, I was wearing it right here, right? And so when that business blew up, my business partner actually accused me of stealing, embezzling, it was the word he used, like $360,000, just all kinds of craziness. Of course, it didn't go anywhere. I'm still licensed. Old cops came to my house.
Right.
But I made that so easy because it was what I was so hiding. I was hiding my shame and hiding my guilt. You got to give it a seat at the table. You got to take care of it. You got to love it and find out what the needs are. Why is it there? Why is it showing up? What is it trying to tell you? And then you're not vulnerable to it anymore.
I think it's acceptance of the past.
But it's not the past. It's part of who you are. It's wholeness. It's wholeness. It's coming into your wholeness. Again, with every negative, there is a positive. If you deny the negative, you'll never actually get the full gift of the positive.
Maybe a better way that I'd like to state it is this is the acceptance, not of your past, but of a part of you mm-hmm. that existed and still exists and will always exist
mm-hmm.
and is a big part of the reason you are who you are today.
Yeah.
So acceptance, maybe not of the past, because time is, if we're getting real, you know, deep, it's a construct.
Yeah. I want to give you a real life example of this. So I had a client, you know, he's very successful and he's triggered by everything. He's so like judgmental and this and that. So he calls me and he goes, he's just freaking out. I'm like, what's going on? He's like, I've got this guy in my office who's telling me that everything that P. Diddy did was made up. And all of this is made up shit. Made up shit. And he's like, and what kind of piece of shit could this guy be? How am I supposed to go to work with him? And he's like flipping out. I'm like, hold on a second. I said, you got to understand something. This is a society issue.
Right.
All of us are guilty in this. How many times have we seen maybe an uncle getting a little too, you know, close and talking about, you know, oh, look at you, all grown up, blah, blah, blah. Right. All those different things, right? Like just touching too much or saying too much that we've never stopped or we never said anything about and we turn. So we are all suffering because we now have to take a look at ourselves as a society. And so that's what it is, right? So those things that we get angry about and we judge and we trigger are just parts of ourselves that we are denying. We have the potentiality. And so when we deny the potentiality of the worst, like a P. Diddy or whatever, whoever you think is the worst and the behavior you think is the worst, when you deny that behavior, you are also denying the potentiality for thoughts that haven't even been conceived yet. We have the potential to do things that haven't even been thought of
yet. Is it kind of a blockage?
It is. It is, because this is our wholeness. God didn't judge kings that killed millions of people, did he? Did he? He didn't. Because that is life, and life goes on, and life is chaos. Life is good. Life is bad. Life is ugly. Life is beautiful. But we are the light. And when we stay in the light, but if we deny the darkness, there is no light.
Mm. If I had a mic, I'd drop it. But how does someone who's interested in beginning that inner journey, is there a direction you would steer them in to get started? Because I think that internal reflection is something very foreign to most people outside of prayer. And prayer is a form.
Yeah.
When you're speaking to God,
yeah,
you're kind of speaking to yourself, the universe, whatever you believe, you're putting it out there, but it's coming from you. How does someone who's familiar with prayer or the occasional prayer when the shit hits the fan, I gotta pray, God help me, mm-hmm. you know, not when the good times, but you know, what are some of the practices that any person can take to start them on that journey to awareness?
So there's an app called Insight Timer, INSIGHT, and it has almost every kind of practice you can imagine. It's got breath work, it's got chanting, it's got binaural beats, it's got meditation. Pick one. Commit to 5 minutes a day for 40 days and just start, just observe what happens. Just observe what happens and then go to 10 minutes and then go to more. But there's lots of, you know, breath work is a very powerful way to go within and to become conscious and to soothe your nervous system, because what we're doing is allowing our brain to run our lives. Those thoughts are not us. Those are programming that you got from your ancestors. Like I come right. from the longest line of the most fucked up people. Okay? Like a long, long line of fucked up people. So
you're the one.
Yeah. Like I am the one. Says, I truly believe I am the one. I am a way shower and I am healing all of my ancestors. Not only because, you know, we always think I'm doing this for my daughters and my granddaughter and their children and their, you know, of course I do that. It goes all the way back and it goes all the way forward. And so I do believe that, but I think each one of us are the one. We are all here for a purpose. And so if you can't answer, just start asking yourself as you're doing this 5 minutes a day practice, who am I? And if you're answering, I'm Sean, the medical this, you know, the father this, you don't know the answer.
Right.
You don't know the answer yet. Why am I here and who am I?
You know, life is noisy. And I get it. I got a 7-year-old, a 2-year-old, a dog now, because I don't know what the fuck I was thinking. But
and a hot wife.
And a hot wife, thank God. And she's the quietest of all of them. So I got no complaints when it comes to her bringing noise into my life. But sometimes I just feel I don't have the time. And you guys see me, Pharma Social. I'm hustling. I'm doing my thing. I'm out here on a Saturday shooting with you.
Okay.
I had time. I used to wake up at 4:30 in the morning and get on my knees and pray and do my daily ritual. And again, this is something that even someone who's disciplined to some extent loses track of or loses discipline with. I want to dumb it down and just say, listen, give yourself grace enough to give a minute.
Yeah.
David Meltzer, who is a mentor of both of ours,
he
uses the ridiculous or the seemingly ridiculous example of go to the gym for 1 minute.
Yeah.
Just 1 minute.
Yeah.
And it's great because if your ass trekked all the way to the gym, you're going to put in more than 1 minute. So I'd say not even 5 minutes for 40 days. Give yourself 1 minute in the morning of fucking quiet time
just quiet.
And see the beauty in it. wake up, sit at the end of your bed, I am grateful for, and just rifle off a few things to start the day.
Well, gratitude is the ultimate state of receiving. So if you're in any point in your life where you want to grow and you want abundance and you want all these things and you desire, you start there in that practice, but embodying it, okay? Just making a gratitude list, go further. Pick up the phone and call that person that you can think of right now and just say, you know what? I just want to tell you I love you. And I'm so grateful that you're in my life, right? Think of people from the past and reach out and tell them. Embody it, you know, open the doors, do things for people, really embodying that gratitude, not just writing a list, but gratitude is really where it all starts.
Yeah, and it's simple and it's something that we can all do. I just want to thank you for coming by today and sharing your story with us and sharing your amazing energy. Tell our audience a little bit more about your coaching program. Tell us where we can find you and just send us off with some of that magic that I know you have in you.
Yeah, so I have decided, I figured out who I am. I am a way shower, and I am here to help people become the best version of themselves, self-actualized, enlightenment, whatever you want to call it. And I've realized that for some reason I can do this through business owners, entrepreneurs, top performing people. And the thing that you said before, I don't have enough time. That is an illusion, right? That we create. And so I have created several programs that are called Soulful Prosperity, basically, and they help people to get back to, when you're a business owner or an entrepreneur, you get into it because you love what you do and you wanted the freedom. The next thing you know, you don't like what you do and you have no freedom. We build ourselves a golden cage. And so that's what my programs are for, to help you get that all back where it needs to be so you can focus on the things that truly matter, that light you up where you are being the light in the world. So prosperousjen.com, J-E-N-N, two N's. And you can go there and check out all my different programs. That's really it.
Thank you again so much for your beautiful story, your beautiful energy, and sharing it with me and the audience. And I just hope that one person out there, at least one person, but I know there's going to be far more.
And you don't have to go that far down. You don't even have to have one more bad day or one more day of saying, I don't have enough time.
Amen to that. I'm going to work on that, y'all. It's easy to get overwhelmed with a lot going on in your life, but never give up on yourself. Always know that there is an internal war, battle, struggle within every human being, and we all have the power to vanquish those demons and step into our true purpose and our true selves. As always, let's get it. Be blessed, and thank you for tuning in.